newcomers elected to the House in historic races, AOC and her colleagues came to be known collectively as the Squad. This included Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, a Muslim of Somali origin who first came to the United States as a refugee, as well as Michigan's Rashida Tlaib of Palestinian origin, and Ayanna Pressley, becoming the first black woman from Massachusetts to be elected to Congress. Together, they threatened to take on the D.C. political establishment, engaging in bold direct action, holding sit-ins and protesting outside Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office. Indeed, at the time, these self-styled socialists or social democrats seemed to represent a new generation that wasn't afraid to break from traditional liberal orthodoxy.
If you're a one-term Congress member, so what? You can make 10 years worth of change in one term if you're not afraid.
AOC would decry Israel's massacre of Palestinians during the Right to Return marches in 2018-2019 and said that the Democratic Party needed new leadership and need not remain under the old guard of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Indeed, these new faces of the Democratic Party's left wing were not the usual old white men one was accustomed to seeing running the political affairs of the nation, but instead young, vibrant women of color who were willing to play hardball with Democrats and push for universal health care, a $15 minimum wage, action on climate change, and policies rooted in human rights. At least that's how it started. Whether it was the persistent and sustained attacks from Republicans or unrelenting pressure to conform to Democratic leadership, whatever it was, somewhere along the way, these so-called progressives, regarded by many as heroes, became the opposite of everything they had campaigned for. For many people who helped them with their election campaigns, canvassed in the streets, donated their hard-earned money, and put in so much time and energy to get them elected, this felt like a betrayal. The first warning signs began appearing when we heard last year in 2020 from Politico how AOC was firing her former staff that got her elected and replacing them with establishment figures. Not only that, but she wasn't extending support to other progressive challengers for fear of angering her party colleagues. Again, the entire premise of the progressive strategy is to challenge and unseat establishment Democrats. Instead of supporting new challengers, AOC was protecting the party. Now AOC was no longer protesting and holding sit-ins in Speaker Pelosi's office. Now she was calling Nancy Pelosi Mama Bear. Progressives began doing other inexplicable things, like Ilhan Omar voting present on a motion to recognize the Armenian genocide. Ayanna Pressley and Ro Khanna went on to vote in favor of a resolution condemning the Boycott and Divestment Sanction Movement, or BDS, which is a nonviolent peaceful protest against Israeli apartheid. Ilhan Omar even went on to sign a letter calling on then-Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to push for a renewal of the arms embargo on Iran before its expiry in late 2020. During the coronavirus crisis, corporations received the largest giveaway in history. The entire U.S. government, both Republicans and Democrats, all voted to give them trillions of dollars. Bernie Sanders and AOC came to the floor to give fiery speeches and pretend that they were outraged that so much money was being given to companies who don't need it, favoring them over working-class Americans who were without jobs, health care, or wages. And in the end, after all that talk, they still voted for the bill. They voted for the CARES Act, the HEROES Act, and virtually every so-called relief package, giving crumbs to the people and the lion's share to corporate America. Now, the latest so-called progressives to be elected to Congress recently include Jamal Bowman to New York's 16th congressional seat. He unseated a longtime ally of the Israeli lobby, Elliot Engel. And in order to prove that he wasn't a threat to Israeli interests, Bowman published an open letter in Riverdale Press confirming that he is opposed to the BDS movement, the most peaceful and nonviolent form of protest that anyone can adopt against Israel's oppression of Palestinians. As a matter of fact, Bowman admitted that former President Barack Obama was so impressed by this open letter that he even called him to endorse his candidacy. Another self-styled progressive named Richie Torres was elected to New York's 15th congressional district.
Hello, I'm Richie Torres. I am Afro-Latino, LGBTQ, millennial, progressive, and pro-Israel.
It's once again so astonishing to me how these politicians claim their politics and policies are rooted in human rights as they continue to protect Israel from any criticism and to be in a party in a government that subsidizes Israel's illegal occupation and oppression of Palestinians. During the 2020 Democratic primaries, when it became clear that Bernie Sanders' agenda became a threat to the Democratic Party, once again, Barack Obama made a few calls behind the scenes, persuading many of the challengers in the field to all drop out and rally behind Joe Biden. Once the race had been narrowed down to just two candidates with the entire weight of the establishment behind Joe Biden, it didn't take long for Bernie Sanders to drop out. Bernie Sanders had prided himself in building a popular grassroots movement made up of all age groups, ethnicities, and backgrounds. Instead of using his popularity and political capital to actually advance the progressive agenda, once again, Bernie Sanders pledged his support behind the establishment pick, Hillary Clinton in 2016, and now Joe Biden in 2020, abandoning his movement. The squad, who for the most part had endorsed Bernie Sanders, also rallied behind Joe Biden. Despite Joe Biden's abysmal record of working with segregationists, trying to cut Social Security, supporting the Iraq War, pushing the war on drugs, catering to the credit card industry, to the banks, to Big Pharma, and virtually every branch of the American corporate machine, these so-called progressives decided to endorse him and campaign on his behalf. How could these people who say their politics are all about elevating the working class and upholding human rights, who want Medicare for all, who want to increase Social Security, cut military spending, who stand on the opposite side of Joe Biden on virtually every issue, how can they just casually pledge their support to him? The line that we kept hearing from them and in the media was that, yeah, you know, Joe Biden may be terrible on this issue or that issue, but once he's elected, we'll push him left. We have to elect him because we have no choice. Donald Trump is so terrible. He's an existential threat. He's the most dangerous president in modern history, which, again, as horrible as Donald Trump surely is, that title definitely belongs to George W. Bush and his administration. But of course, all these neocons were themselves recruited, like Colin Powell speaking at the Democratic National Convention, in order to stump for Joe Biden. So once again, I ask these so-called progressives, how on earth can you remain in a party that brings a war criminal and a mass murderer like Colin Powell to speak at your convention? If neoconservatives like Bill Kristol, George Bush, and other villainous figures like that are siding with you, don't you think there's something fundamentally wrong going on here? The entire media apparatus and Democratic Party acted as if Donald Trump had appeared out of the blue. They conveniently left out the fact that Joe Biden is the reason someone like Donald Trump was elected in the first place. Biden spent his entire career, some 40 plus years in government, building the system, being an architect of the neoliberal policies that eroded manufacturing, that took jobs overseas, deregulated Wall Street and the economy, let corporations run wild, and created so much of the economic misery and turmoil that could allow someone as heinous as Donald Trump to even win over a neoliberal figure like Hillary Clinton in the first place. Once again, the so-called left wing or progressive wing of the Democratic Party, the squad, they proved that they were willing to put their party first, not policies, not principles, nor people. In December 2020, with Speaker Pelosi's re-election as House Speaker coming up, an opportunity arose for progressives in Congress to actually do something. Many pundits, commentators, and journalists on the left, such as Jimmy Dore, Breonna Joy Gray, and NFL player Justin Jackson, argued in favor of force the vote. Earlier in January this year, Nancy Pelosi was re-elected Speaker of the House. With the final tally at 216 to 209, she won against McCarthy by a razor-thin margin of just 7 votes. If progressives had banded together, they could have easily leveraged their votes for her in exchange for a vote on Medicare for All. Instead, they rolled over like faithful, obedient poodles, and every single one of them voted for Nancy Pelosi to be re-elected House Speaker without demanding a single concession. Remember, this is the same woman who refused to impeach George Bush over the Iraq War, even when she knew that he was lying about Iraq having weapons of mass destruction. Again, just a month later, in February 2021, progressives had yet again another opportunity to push Biden left, as they claimed they would do. One of the key policies that the squad were elected on in the first place was raising the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 an hour. Joe Biden made this a campaign promise. Initially, the $15 minimum wage was put into a mammoth piece of legislation containing up to $1.9 trillion in this so-called COVID relief bill. When Biden tried to force this bill through the Senate using budget reconciliation, the Senate parliamentarian, whose opinion is non-binding and merely advisory, said that the $15 minimum wage had to be removed. It was also claimed that Joe Manchin, a senator from West Virginia who was opposed to the $15 minimum wage being in the bill, threatened to vote against it if it was kept in there. Joe Biden pretended that his hands were tied, that he, the most powerful man in the world, the President of the United States, could not do anything because of an unelected Senate parliamentarian and a lone senator from West Virginia. Consequently, the $15 minimum wage was removed from the bill. And when the bill was sent back to the House, it passed. It passed with a razor-thin margin of 9 votes. Just 9 votes. That's all it would have taken for progressives to hold up this must-pass bill. Instead of putting their foot down and saying, no, we refuse to vote for this bill because it doesn't have the $15 minimum wage, the so-called left wing of the Democratic Party, these progressives in Congress, they just accepted it. They voted for this bill minus the $15 minimum wage. Isn't that interesting how Joe Manchin is willing to play hardball with Biden, but the progressives who claim they fight for workers won't? Not just that, but ever since Biden has taken office, AOC and her colleagues have done nothing but cover for Biden, even as he continues the very same policies they once criticized under Trump. Biden has continued to treat refugees coming to the United States in the same appalling conditions and manners as Donald Trump. Instead of calling him out for this, AOC goes on her virtual town hall and claims that what's happening at the border now is not the same, solely because Biden isn't ripping babies from their mother's arms. That's interesting because under Trump, AOC called the facilities at the U.S.-Mexico border concentration camps, with the phrase kids in cages becoming emblematic of the border crisis. Now those terms have completely disappeared from AOC's vocabulary. Right now, there are over 15,000 unaccompanied minors in custody at the U.S. border in appalling, cramped spaces. Biden has not only reopened the same camps that Donald Trump was using, he is also continuing to separate minors, but instead of doing it on the U.S. side of the border, he makes families do it for him on the Mexican side of the border. Biden refuses to accept families or adults, so the families and adults just tell their children to go on without them. The Washington Times reported in early April that the Department of Homeland Security seeks to continue construction of Trump's border wall, which so many liberals decried as racist and immoral, and now they say nothing. Biden has also requested to increase the military budget to $753 billion. That's the largest in history, even bigger than Trump's. As expected, the so-called progressives in Congress have not said a word. When Biden bombed Syria and now also plans to violate the Afghan peace deal and continue occupying Afghanistan, where is AOC? Where is the squad? Complete silence. Despite being the most popular politicians in the country, they say nothing and allow Biden to proceed unchecked with the imperialist agenda of the U.S. regime. Their silence is not incompetence, it's complicity. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities.
Joining me is Ryan Knight. He's the host of the Amped Up podcast. Thanks for coming on the show, Ryan. It's great to have you on the program.
Hey, Richard. It's great to be here and great to see you again.
So, Ryan, I wanted to start out with this recent development that we saw in Politico, where Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, is taking money that she fundraised and giving it to establishment Democrats. People like Alyssa Slotkin, Connor Lamb, Carolyn Bordeaux. These are people who've openly celebrated both Trump and Biden's bombings of the Middle East. They've celebrated Trump's assassination of General Soleimani. Straight up warmongers. I mean, what was your initial reaction to that?
AOC and the squad were sent to Congress to fight back against the corrupt system, not to defend it like the corporatists do. And so if we just look at the past week and a half alone, AOC has called socialists and anyone who criticizes Joe Biden, quote unquote, bad faith actors. Then a few days later, she tried to say that Biden's cruelty and inhumanity at the border is somehow better than Trump's cruelty and inhumanity at the border, despite the fact that they both locked children in cages and they both are separating children from their families, except Joe Biden is just doing it on the other side of the border. And then finally, like you just said, the report came out a few days ago, or last Friday, excuse me, that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who claims to be just a people-funded grassroots candidate, was taking those grassroots donations and sending them to corporate Democrats who oppose Medicare for All and support endless wars. And this is the part we have to be clear on. Anyone who campaigns on and promises revolutionary change and takes money from poor and working class people to get power and then refuses to use their seat to actually fight for the socialist policies that they campaigned on, that is literally the definition of a bad faith actor, right? So AOC is not leading the left. She's stabbing the left in the back. And we've seen that over and over again now from, go back to January. AOC and the squad did not force the vote on Medicare for All and demand concessions for their vote for Pelosi. They didn't pressure Joe Biden on the $15 minimum wage fight. And again, they continue to apologize for the corrupt establishment instead of fighting back against it. So I'm over here wondering, when does the fight begin?
So, I mean, when you heard this term, bad faith actor, coming from AOC, saying that people who say there's no progress under Joe Biden compared to Trump are privileged in their critique. I mean, who is she referring to when she says that?
Well, I also think we have to step back and realize that the Democrats control the entire government right now. They control the House, the Senate, and the White House. And they're still blaming Republicans for all of our problems, despite the fact that it's not Donald Trump anymore who's dropping the bombs and who's locking the children in cages and who's increasing the military spending and who's putting corporations over people. That's Joe Biden who's doing all those things now. So for AOC to say that those of us, you know, the activists and those in the grassroots community who are fighting back against this corrupt system and demanding representation from people who campaigned on policies. That's all we're doing. AOC and the squad ran on a set of policies. All we're telling them is you need to own up to your promises and fight for the policies you campaigned on. To call us bad faith actors because we see that, you know, Joe Biden is governing the exact same way Trump did, and basically we've just got a kinder face on the oligarchy, but all of the destruction and the damage is continuing that continued under Trump. That is very dangerous. And then we have an entire corporate media apparatus who, you know, when Trump was doing these things, when Trump was locking kids in cages and you know, engaging in endless wars and bombing Syria, the media was up in arms about it. But when Joe Biden does it, they just look the other way. And so that's why it's important for independent media and for people like me and you to hold the Democratic Party accountable, because there's no accountability in the press. And so when AOC did that, when she said that, you know, we're the bad faith actors. And then she, after that, she actually said that we need solidarity. We need to build solidarity with the Biden administration. So AOC is telling us that she wants to build solidarity with the corporate Democrats who are continuing to govern like the Republicans do. They want solidarity with the capitalist right-wing Democratic Party and its leaders, but they don't want solidarity with the grassroots. And that should concern everyone, because that's how change happens. Change happens from the grassroots. And I thought she was leading a movement. It turns out, like I said, she's stabbing the movement right in the back. And I think even sadder, her fans can't see it. There's like this new cult of personality that has developed around AOC. And it's scary.
So Ryan, you've been holding progressives accountable. What are some of the attacks and abuse that you have received or have seen others receive as a result of just calling out these politicians for, rolling over and doing the bidding of the establishment?
I've been called racist, misogynist, for simply reporting what AOC did and AOC said, for simply saying that AOC gave grassroots donations to corporate Democrats. There's been people who've told me that AOC is, and I quote, unassailable. And if you look up the word unassailable in the dictionary, it literally means that you can't be questioned or challenged. And if you think that a leader cannot be questioned or challenged, you don't belong to a progressive movement. You belong to a cult of personality movement. Seriously, I mean that. And I think when you start to unpack what it is, I think that a lot of these kind of, you know, the boutique left, or they're really just liberals, to be honest. I think they're so afraid of any criticism of AOC or Bernie or the squad because they've placed all their faith in trying to reform and move the corrupt Democratic Party to the left. So they treat even valid criticisms as an attack on their belief system. But both history and our current reality have shown that the Democratic Party cannot be moved left. You cannot move a party left that is owned by Wall Street and that is owned by the military-industrial complex and that is owned by the billionaire class. And so this whole process of trying to spend all this energy to move a party left that can't be moved left would be much better spent trying to build power for the people outside of the corrupt duopoly. But they don't want to do that. They want to keep putting these heroes on a pedestal and worshiping AOC and worshiping the squad and even in some points worshiping Bernie instead of actually taking matters into our own hands and building power for the people and building like a true left working class party in our country, because we don't have that. Both parties in Washington represent big business and giant corporations. Neither party represent the people.
I mean, this cult of personality, this blind adoration of politicians is obviously not healthy. What do you think are going to be the long-term effects of that? And, you know, just on a final note, what would you like to see from these elected officials and politicians?
I would just end with, why is it fair that in the United States of America that we have two political parties that serve the interests of the capitalist class and of the giant corporations, but zero major parties that serve the interests of the working class? That is not right. That is not fair. And I would just tell people, it is, you're never going to change the Democratic Party. They are going to continue to sedate the public with all these platitudes and all these promises, and then you give them power, and then they turn around and they govern just like the Republicans do for their giant corporations and for the military-industrial complex, and the insanity just keeps repeating itself over and over again. So no matter who wins the election every 4 years, the wars continue, the inequality continues, and the injustice continues. So I would tell people, stop silencing debate, stop putting all your faith in people like AOC and Bernie Sanders and the Squad, and start realizing that we have the power. You know, stop giving your power away to these politicians. Demand something for your vote. You know, get into your communities. Build, do mutual aid in your own communities. Stop thinking that the only answer is trying to change a party that tells us over and over again that it hates us and wants nothing to do with progressives. You know, I feel like we're caught in this abusive relationship. So the only way to end an abusive relationship is to leave it. So I think I encourage all progressives to start working outside of the Democratic Party. It's a lost cause. It's a dead end.
Ryan Knight, thanks so much for the work you do on your podcast. Really appreciate having you on the program.
Thank you, and I hope you come back on my show again. You were awesome to have.
At the end of the day, let's be clear on something. Regardless of how much pressure these politicians face from their parties and other forces in Washington, D.C., the Squad, AOC, Bernie Sanders, these are some of the most popular politicians in the United States, if not the world. They have enormous, powerful platforms which they could use to mount pressure and push the policies that they were elected to implement, but actively choose not to. As Ro Khanna himself admits, being a U.S. congressperson is one of the most privileged positions in the world. Whatever the reason behind their flip-flopping and hypocrisy, what's clear is that these are not the same people anymore. The AOC of 2018 is not the AOC of 2021. Instead of challenging Democrats from within, helping to cause more upset victories, playing hardball, playing politics correctly, pulling smart moves, they are nothing but a marketing tool designed to sheep herd Americans back into the Democratic Party, which again, by anyone's definition, is a right-wing party. They make sure that Americans never explore other options such as third parties or direct action, protesting, general strikes, rent strikes, debt strikes. Their entire purpose is to protect the establishment in its entirety and to insulate the Democratic Party and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer from criticism. The Squad and all these other so-called progressives, they're not a threat to the establishment. They are de facto the establishment, but with a new face. Remember, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are two sides of the same coin. Their differences are minimal, and they serve the same corporate masters. They uphold U.S. hegemony. They uphold the U.S. military-industrial complex. They protect Israel. They continue to deprive their own population of basic things like healthcare and housing. People who protect that kind of political system are not your friends. People often look at FDR as a progressive champion because he passed the New Deal. But they forget that the New Deal was only passed because FDR was pressured by a coalition of socialists, communists, unionists who threatened him with revolution. The New Deal was his way of silencing them, of placating the left. And after that, he proceeded to co-opt the left in order to blunt it, to render it ineffective, and to neutralize this threat to the elite. Americans would do well to learn their own history. You don't reform the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party reforms you. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة. The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him,
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the qualities of the pious people based on the sermon of the pious people, or the sermon of Muttaqeen, famously known as the Khutbatul Muttaqeen in Nahjul Balagha. And we reached this phrase where Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he's discussing about one of the qualities of the pious people, he says that a pious person is one who in صَمَتْ لَمْ يَغُمَّهُ صَمْتُ, that if he is silent, his silence does not make him sad. Now this is a very interesting quality, because in the previous session we said that normally when a person is silent in the wrong situation, he becomes sad. So in other words, a pious person is one who avoids, or completely, because of his full control over his speech and his silence, knows when to remain silent, and therefore he never becomes sad, because he is always silent in the right situations. But maybe the narration or this particular phrase is also referring to another form of explanation, another form of emotion that a person has when he is silent. See, when a person knows the truth, when a person has the ability to express himself and has the knowledge about certain realities and understands the truth of a certain matter, but because of the social circumstances he is forced to remain silent. It may happen that a person, because of certain issues, may be forced to remain silent and not be able to speak his own feelings.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, if such a situation, as I said previously, it might be possible that at certain times a person may be forced to remain silent because of social circumstances. He cannot speak what he feels, or cannot express himself in the right manner and say what is correct according to his view. Or maybe he is not invited to speak. He is not told, he is not asked by the people to, for example, guide them of a certain issue or tell them about a certain thing. And he cannot obviously go himself to tell them about that reality, about that particular thing. In such a situation, if he is silent, he might have some sadness in his heart that why he cannot express those things that he has in his mind and in his heart. In this situation, a pious person is such that he is not saddened. He does not fall into a state of sadness, depression, and negativity. Why? Because when he doesn't speak, he doesn't have a state of emptiness in his heart. You see, when does a person become sad? A person becomes sad when he feels empty. He feels that there is something empty in his heart. And he feels that when he speaks those words are going to fill that gap that exists in his existence. He feels that, for example, when I express myself in this way and tell people about this thing, even when they might not listen to him, or maybe when it's not the right time to speak, but he feels that I wish I could. And he feels that when he speaks, he's going to remove that emptiness in his heart. That is not what a pious person thinks, because a pious person, his heart is already filled with God's love. He knows that what he truly needs is attachment and fulfillment with God. He knows that that connection is what's going to save him, is going to fill all the gaps that are existing in his heart. And therefore a pious person, by his silence, does not become sad. He knows that he has taken the right step by remaining silent. He knows that he has taken the right step by speaking. Because of this vast and strong and foundational awareness of a pious person, it gives him that strength to be able to have that that peace in his heart at all times and not remain sad in these situations.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, apart from a pious person not being sad while he's silent, also there's another thing that a pious person does, and that is when he laughs. Let's say when he laughs, according to this particular sermon, he says that when he laughs, his voice does not rise. Like, he doesn't laugh in a loud voice. And this is one of the good qualities that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions regarding those who are pious. He says that وَإِنْ ضَحِكَ لَمْ يَعْلُ صَوْتُهُ. When he laughs, his voice is not raised. Now, basically, there might be many reasons why this happens and why this is encouraged in Islam. But the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, we have in the narrations that he never laughed in a loud voice. And probably this is because of the honor and respect that a pious person has of his own self. And because, see, laughing loudly without any reason is a sign of lack of control, and a sign of sometimes could be a sign of weakness in some people. It's not general, I'm not generalizing this issue, but it is possible that some people might perceive it that way. But this is not the actual reason. The actual reason is that because a pious person is always engrossed in the hereafter about death, you will notice that even when his laughter is there, he will either smile, but his voice does not go high. Here the narration says, "Lam ya'alu sawtu." His voice does not go high, like in a high-pitched laughter. You know, now I can't laugh here in a high-pitched tone to express to you how loud that would be. You've heard people laughing loudly in a loud voice, right? That's what we mean here. But if it's a soft laughter, of course, a soft laughter is something which is not against the Sharia. In fact, the pious people and the good people need to be happy. They need to express happiness. They need to joke with one another and create that environment of happiness. What is spoken about here is laughing in a loud voice like a proper loud voice, you know, that you can hear nicely. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He gives us the opportunity and the ability to have control of ourselves in different situations in our lives, and to strengthen our ability to be able to be always aware of the different situations where we can express ourselves emotionally in different forms that are correct and based on the right principles. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال هناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The door is open for U.S. drone sales to authoritarian countries like the United Arab Emirates, says Sarah Sirota, reporter, in an article titled, After Slamming Trump, U.S. Lawmakers Silent on Biden Drone Export Policy. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. When the Trump administration announced last July it was loosening decades-old restrictions on military drone exports, the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee came out swinging. Progressive Democrats pounced and introduced legislation to reverse the decision. The new policy, they correctly warned, opened the door for sales to authoritarian countries like the United Arab Emirates that Democratic and Republican administrations alike had denied since the Reagan era. As we explore the repercussions of today's announcement on our broader foreign policy goals and our national security interests, Senator Robert Menendez said of the Trump administration's July 24th announcement, this reckless decision once again makes it more likely that we will export some of our most deadly weaponry to human rights abusers across the world. This is yet another reckless move by an administration fixated with eliminating the international cooperation. now in a real position to influence policy as chair of the committee thanks to two runoff elections in Georgia that few analysts expected would both result in Democratic victories, Menendez has been silent on the issue. Reuters reported on March 25th that the Biden-led National Security Council is looking to keep the shift in place and eventually form a new international agreement to guide drone exports, enabling deals selling General Atomics MQ-9B drones to Taiwan and the UAE, which the State Department authorized in the twilight of Trump's presidency to proceed. It would be an extension of the decision made by the Trump State Department to no longer observe their national missile technology control regime's strong presumption of denial standard for exports of the most sophisticated drones on the market and instead invoke its national discretion. Reports such as Reuters often emerge as a trial balloon, testing whether a new policy will engender public pushback. This one didn't. The chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, an outspoken hawk, made no public statements in the wake of this news. No press releases, no rebukes on social media. That's despite the UAE's airstrikes against civilians in Yemen and Menendez's numerous criticisms of arms sales to the Emirates, as well as his notable effort in 2019 to block the Trump administration's attempt to greenlight billions of dollars in exports without congressional approval by declaring a national emergency. Concerns about the former president's drive to sell MQ-9s to the UAE also motivated a bipartisan group of senators to support a new bill in the weeks after the State Department announced the MTCR policy change that would counteract its aims. The bill, introduced by Senator Chris Murphy, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and co-sponsored by Senators Chris Coons, Mike Lee, Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders, would prevent exports of sophisticated military drones, with an exception made for NATO members and other close allies. According to Juan Packen, a spokesperson for Menendez and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's Democratic majority, the panel's team has instead worked behind the scenes on the issue, telling The Intercept in an email recently, "The Senate Foreign Relations staff has in fact continued making several inquiries into the State Department regarding the MTCR policy change as it continues to be of great concern to Chairman Menendez." Packen said the inquiries were sent in the past few months but declined to share copies. The Democrats' dominant voice on foreign policy matters in the Senate didn't stick his neck out when his party's leader, finally in a position to reverse a reckless policy change, declined to do so, and neither did the rank and file. Indeed, no lawmaker who opposed the Trump administration's decision or called attention to the former president's extreme approach to arms sales has publicly derided the Biden-led White House's reported plan to continue authorizing exports of advanced military drones using its own discretion rather than a strong presumption of denial per MTCR guidelines. Murphy, Coons, and even Sanders, perhaps the Senate's most vocal critic of U.S. support for the war in Yemen, have stayed quiet. A congressional staffer told The Intercept in an email recently that Murphy does continue to have concerns about loosening restrictions on drone exports and has raised these concerns directly with the White House. The staffer did not immediately reply to a request for more detail about specific actions Murphy has taken, though. A spokesperson for Coons did not respond to an email about the senator's position on the news report that Biden intends to preserve Trump's policy change. A spokesperson for Sanders did not provide a comment by press time. The stakes couldn't be higher. Not only did this policy change open the door to proliferation of some of U.S. most lethal spying capabilities, it undermined an important international framework for curbing the global spread of deadly cruise missiles. Especially given the Biden administration's intention to keep his predecessor's plan, the focus on economic competition rather than human rights or security may open the door to eventual leniencies on exports of increasingly destructive military capabilities like cruise missiles. Further, the State Department has not yet revealed whether the policy change allows cooperative development and production opportunities with customers' native manufacturers, which some trade advocates have pushed for. Meanwhile, American companies and trade groups have kept up their lobbying campaigns to influence policy. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for example, lists unmanned aerial systems and the U.S. Conventional Arms Transfer Policy, or CATP, under which the Trump administration originally announced its intention to expand U.S. drone exports in 2018, as among its top lobbying issues in a filing with the House of Representatives for the first quarter of 2021. The Aerospace Industries Association also lists CATP as one of its core issues during the same time frame per a lobbying disclosure. During the first quarter, General Atomics had contracts worth tens of thousands of dollars with lobbying firm American Defense International, which would secure meetings on UAVs and foreign weapon sales, and Atlantic Strategies Group, which would gain support for foreign military sale funding for drones, according to public records. The Political Action Committee for the company has also donated thousands of dollars to Menendez.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant fact.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
دل کسی نشوندن من نمیدونم چجوری
یه کاری کاری دلش بگیره.
Never break a heart because it has negative consequences in your life. Even in a tradition, we read that if someone breaks a heart, it would be very difficult to compensate, even if you spend the whole world. Dear youths have to take care not to break someone's heart, especially their parents. In a true historic event, we read, once a wealthy man by the name of Hussein ibn Ala took 20 of his friends to Mecca and paid all their dues on this trip. He spent lots of money, and on different stations he served his friends with food and water.
بعد مکه اومد خدمت امام صادق توقع داشت آقا بگه باریکالله احسن چه خرجی کرد.
When the Hajj pilgrimage was finished, he went to visit Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. He expected the Imam to admire him for the generosity that he showed during this Hajj pilgrimage. Imam al-Sadiq told him, woe unto you who break the heart of the believers. Hussein ibn Ala was shocked by this reaction of Imam al-Sadiq and said, what did I do wrong, O Imam? Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam replied, didn't you think that maybe among your friends is someone who wants to have a share in your generosity? Maybe some of your friends wanted to benefit from the rewards on paying on the way of Allah during this trip. You, by paying all the dues, took away opportunity from them. You made them feel like a poor. You break their heart. From this story, we understand that if you break a heart, it would be very difficult to compensate, even if you spend the whole world for that. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasser Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.